Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another hour of Tech Talk, and we've got plenty of that to come. With me this week, as always, we have Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet. Hello, Robin!
Hi.
Right. Okay, fine. So it's going to be one of those kind of shows. You know, this is a talk show, right? We have to talk. So let me try that again, Robin. This is what we always used to do when we did the radio road shows. You'd say, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I can't hear you.
Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet.
Hello. Everybody. I am so pleased to be here.
Don't read it. Say it with feeling. We've got Tim Schwartz from lifeafterblindness.com. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Stephen.
Where are
Hi,
you?
Robin. I am not at home. I am at my parents' house, which is about an hour away from my home. And I brought with me hundreds and hundreds of dollars of audio recording equipment, microphones, cables, and such. And I've just got headphones and an iPhone because tech problems. So, you know.
And let's be honest, Apple, it just works.
It just works.
And someone I love to say that to regularly is our resident Android guy. Emails Andy. How are you doing, Andy?
Hi. I thought you were going to say, here's someone else who just works. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, but I can't lie to our audience.
Yeah, he does so much more than that. He doesn't just work, yeah.
In cool. fairness, yeah. Right, so I stepped off just before we came on to do this. I stepped off for a minute to go and get a coffee. And I said, I'll go get a coffee. And I'm hearing you guys talk. Now, bearing in mind, when I'm in the conversation, it's all pretty much garbage and discussion about cakes. And then I step away, and I'm hearing all this talk about, you know, we've got this email coming up, and we're going to discuss this. And, well, there's this view on this point. It was all very serious. And I thought, yeah, maybe I should just leave. I think I'm in the way here.
Yeah,
I'm stopping you guys.
Time.
Yeah, that was
your actually going to be leave. Prep.
Wait till I go. Exactly. Well, look, we've got lots to talk about. And, of course, we're not going to speak about Apple today. We are not going to discuss Apple. Well, not maybe at all. I can't say that. But we're certainly not going to speculate on the event because you probably are listening to this as the event has happened or is happening or has gone because, you know, this show goes out Tuesday 1 p.m. And, of course, then immediately after that it's on podcast and it's also available through the week as well. So there's points you'll be listening to this show. The event may have happened. So this has been recorded before the event. Be aware of that. Tune into the next episode where we'll be breaking down all of the Apple event news and what has happened. But before we get into all of the, you know, the stuff we're going to talk about this week, because there is a lot to get through, including a fantastic new feature I want to tell you about from our Technology for Life team at RNIB. Brilliant guys Ooh. And girls. Really excited because a brand new feature starts today on Tech Talk in coordination. I was going to say columbination, but that doesn't sound right. What's the word?
Collaboration.
That's the word. Yes, let's go with that one.
I think you were trying to combine coordination and collaboration.
I think I was, yeah. I think, hang on a sec, more coffee. Just let me, give me a second. Yep, hang on.
In cahoots with. Mm. There you go.
In cahoots, yeah.
Collaboration is where, you know, Christopher Columbus, I don't know, cooperated on discovering America.
Columbination.
Which was this week. Exactly. See, I'm putting everything in my head has just mashed into a big ball of mess. And you've been given it as a present. Did you like it?
we're used to it. So.
So, yeah, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, so Mohammed Atif is going to be joining us a bit later to offer his demonstration on how to set up an Amazon Fire tablet with VoiceView. So this is something which has come up a lot on the RNIB helpline. We want to share that information with you, so we will do that. We're also talking about the US election because it is coming up. Tim, are you looking forward to this one?
I'm desperately looking forward to this election, yes, and its possible outcome.
Yeah.
Yes, and its hopeful, possible result. I am desperate for this election to happen and desperate for January 21st, I think it is, to happen. Yes, so we will definitely get into whether it is accessible or not in the United States to participate in this election, which, yeah, is a tricky question.
Well, it is, and it's an area which, understandably, to some degree, a lot of people aren't touching on because there's slightly bigger things going on, you might argue. But, you know, accessibility is important. Of course it is for all of us to be able to vote in our elections. Lots of talk about that in the UK as well. But anyway, we'll talk about all that a bit later. But look, before that, I want to talk to Robin because Robin, I've had a rumour, and I say a rumour, you told me, that you got yourself a Braille display this week. Is that right?
Yes, I've got it here, and I don't know if you can hear it. Whenever it refreshes, you know, with a new line of Braille, it kind of makes a chunk noise. Yeah. And I don't know if you can hear that. But this is so weird. I have never felt a Braille display before. I'm ashamed to say it.
Oh, come on. What?
We're a disability charity. What? It's been sitting in our cupboard for goodness knows how long. This is, for people that are aware, it's an Optelec Voyager. It's by Tiemann. 44 cell. It's brilliant. It's Optelec? Fantastic. What? But I suspect
what?
That it's...
What's the best before date on that? 1831?
I don't know. But we had two in the cupboard, and one of them had a serial port, just to kind of put it in.
Serial port?
My goodness.
Wow.
But, I mean, it's perfect.
Did it have a floppy disk drive?
Completely. Is it powered
it
by CD. Coal?
It has a CD drive. I can't install the... Okay, so I plug it into my Mac. It works perfectly.
Even the Mac, which always works, just goes, what?
The Mac, it works on with VoiceOver on the Mac.
Wow.
In my VM, it doesn't. I have to use the CD to install drivers for Windows.
For those who don't speak geek, Robin, that means you've got your Windows on your Mac as well.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, so I'm using Windows in a virtual machine, and my Mac doesn't have a CD-ROM drive. So I haven't installed the drivers for the Windows side of the computer yet, but it works perfectly with VoiceOver on the Mac side. It's really surreal. Reading, you know, for the here it says, because we're in Zoom here, it says mute computer audio, it says on the line here, and I'd even forgotten what the dot for, you know, how to indicate a capital, but I do know now because I'm looking at
dot
it
six.
Right in front of me.
Yeah
so
but hang on, I thought you couldn't read Braille, you'd forgotten it all.
No, it was in there somewhere, and I've got it on grade one.
Yeah.
Because I won't have a... I mean, I do remember some of the contractions, but I'm taking it easy. I'm taking it slow.
Yeah.
I'm finding it incredibly enlightening. And I feel powerful. I don't know how to describe it really, but, you know, I've got options now. And it's going to take me a while to get used to, well, how to operate it. There's a ton of buttons on it. I haven't done any Braille input. I'm pressing buttons on the front of it to see what they do, and it's doing things that I don't want it to do. Like, I literally was in a Teams call for work earlier on, and I pressed this top of a rocker button on the front there, and it ditched me out of the call.
Oh, so that's a great... That's... Always remember that button. That's a brilliant button.
The eject button.
I rejoined, and I said, I got kicked out there. I don't know if you noticed. Anyway,
I was so bored in this meeting that I decided just to start pressing buttons randomly, hoping that it would take me out, and it did.
So, yeah, I need to get the manual off the CD somehow. But I'm liking it, and I'm ashamed to say it's the first time I've felt a Braille display.
Well, nothing to be ashamed of. In fact, you know, as much as I'd love to sit here and slag you off about it, I can't, because I'll tell you, from my own experience, being able to read without speech giving you the information, I think is brilliant. And I think it's just something which, over time, when you get more and more used to it, like you say, it's already in there. I felt that as well. When I went back to it, I first learned Braille at school. I did grade one at school, and that was several years ago. And I honestly thought it was gone. Yep. Weirdly, I was very good at French. Can't remember anything, apart from Où est la piscine? Which I think is Who is the Swimming Pool. I may have got that wrong. But like I say, I'm not that good at it anymore, right? And when we were in... My wife and I went to France, and I thought I'd be all cultural. And we went to Paris and had a lovely weekend. This was several years ago when we still could travel. And I had no idea about anything. All I could do was say, no. And that was it. Which was more Glaswegian than Parisian.
You did lots of swimming, though.
Did, absolutely. Où est la piscine, and there was something to do with bath towels, but I can't remember that one. Anyway, so, yeah, I'm not very good at the French stuff, but weirdly, yeah, the Braille all came flooding back. And it does. I think grade one is, once you've kind of got it, you've got it. And then grade two is an absolute nightmare, but you just have to work through it.
And weirdly, all the Braille that I've felt in recent years, which has been on, you know, aspirin packets and stuff like that, I've realised is really hard to read compared to this stuff.
Absolutely,
so,
yeah. It's
I don't know
just
if it's
too
bigger
thin,
or just not very pronounced. But
well, it's because the packaging, when all the boxes are packed together, the Braille is kind of pushed down. It might be good when the box is made, But when you pack all those boxes tightly together and then they're sealed up to be shipped out, they obviously get, you know, pressed together, and it makes the Braille very hard to read. Whereas what you're reading off that display is going to be so pronounced. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's what so many people love the Orbit Reader, because the Braille is signage quality Braille, which means it's very firm. Now, I'll be honest, I found it a bit too firm for my fingers. I get tired after reading very quickly. My fingers were getting sore. I prefer what I call spongy Braille. And I think what you've got might have that, where, you know, as you press the keys, you can kind of almost feel the pins depress a little bit.
Oh, I certainly can.
Yeah. But not right in, but just kind of, they just depress a little bit, and it just makes it easier when you're running your finger across.
It bounces right back.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'd say they're spongy, but...
I like spongy Braille.
Really clear, really clear, and I think... smaller. This is the real size of Braille that I remember. Smaller.
Robin's into Braille. Right, so you know what that means. Tim, you're next.
It's my turn. I've taken one Braille lesson once several years ago, but I might get back into it, maybe. Peer pressure, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll just keep shouting at you until you do it.
Mm-hmm. I'll just do it just to get you to be quiet.
It is difficult when you're older, though. I mean, there's no denial. I mean, as a kid, I think what irritates me is when I was at school, my teachers didn't really bother too much with it. I only got the Braille classes because the teacher was learning herself. She was learning Braille, so she was learning to teach it. And she said, would you like to be my pupil that I teach? And I said, yeah, fine, whatever. I'm a blind guy in a mainstream school. Where am I going, right? So I was like, I'll just sit here and learn Braille. So I did. And that's the only reason I got the chance to do it. Had I been completely blind, it would have been forced upon me. And I think, you know, very much for the benefit, really. But if you've got partial sight at school, and I think that's even true today, sadly, you know, teachers are still not offering Braille to kids who are partially sighted. But if you're blind, they don't insist on it, but they do suggest it. And, of course, the answer these days most often given is, well, you just need, you know, you've got audio and your computer talks and your phone talks. But that's not good enough, and it's not good for literacy. It really isn't, and I've realised this over the years that... And I've said it before, and I know I'm going over old ground, but it just means a lot when you're able to look at a word on a page with reading through your fingers, and you understand the spelling again. You understand grammar. You understand all those things that you forgot or you are beginning to forget. It's nice to get all that back.
So that's exactly why I want to maybe get back into it someday and try the lessons over again, because it was offered to me when I was in school, just like you said, when I had what seemed like at the time plenty of vision, and I didn't know if it was ever going to go away completely or just stay as it was then. And I turned down the option to take Braille in school, and I do regret that. At the same time, sometimes nowadays I feel like a hypocrite, because I'll say just what you said, Braille for literacy and for the skill of it and the use of it is so important and is so necessary and should be learned, and I do fully believe that. At the same time, I'm the first to say, yeah, but I enjoy my audiobooks, and really, you know, I might use Braille in an elevator or on hotel signage, you know, at a hotel, you know, room number, you know, occasional things that I would use it for. So I don't know that I'll really use it a lot. And that's kind of my out excuse to not take lessons again. And
no, I don't feel
hypocritical when I say that.
No, and you shouldn't, because actually, I'll tell you something. I think that's the problem. I think people often sell you the idea of Braille, if it's being sold to you at all, as it's the solution to all your reading problems, and almost that you should just become a Braille reader and turn off JAWS, turn off VoiceOver, never touch it again. I don't agree with that. And I don't think that's
the way. I think it'd be a great compliment.
Exactly. And I think if you only used it for those things, a great tip someone gave me was, because I was thinking about, you know, ways to kind of, you know, because I don't read Braille every day. I don't sit and read it every day. I just don't. Because, you know, especially because the speed I'm going at, if I was to do it, it would take me too long to do what I need to do. So I'm not using it every day. And someone said to me, okay, so what to do is start doing things like print labels. I've got one of those little Dymo Braille labelers. Make labels up for things. If you need to do something, making, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, one of my tasks I've chosen to do is put Braille labels on my plugs so I know what the plug is for. So when I'm setting up my room, because as you guys know, I like to rip everything apart occasionally and rebuild everything from scratch. So I put the Braille labels on my plugs. So it gives me something that I can constantly go back to, you know, and say, oh, what's that for? Oh, that's the monitor, or that's the laptop, or that's whatever. And I think that really does help. having almost a small task. And even if you only use it for that, or you use it for, you know, brief note taking, which is really what I'm looking for, then that's enough. I know it feels like it's a lot of work to do just for that, but then I suppose it's a bit like we talk about the iPhone, you know, when people say to us, and it's an interesting kind of paradox, if that's the right word. I don't think it is, but, you know, again, today's words of the day mean nothing. But, you know, it's an interesting thing, because when we talk to people about the iPhone, we often say, oh, come on, just learn it, will you? Because it's so, you know, start small, start using it for certain things, and once you've learned those things, you'll learn more things, and then you'll be able to do more with it. And it's the same with Braille, I think. So, you know, anyway, I'm on my high horse, and the show's nearly finished again, so let's get on with something else, won't we? But no, I'm really pleased for you, Robin. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I was surprised.
Okay, so let's talk about Microsoft. So they brought out some stuff, a Surface Go and a Surface Pro X. Yeah, so moving on. I mean, okay, right, look, is this worth talking about? I don't know. I mean, Surface Go is the small Surface Pro-style laptop. Although this is more laptop than the previous version, because my understanding of the Surface Go was it was more like a tiny Surface Pro 7, I think it was, as it was kind of labelled at the time. This is more of a laptop form factor, from my understanding.
Yep.
So that's, okay, interesting, I suppose. Surface Pro X, this is the ARM processors again. So for those who aren't really up on all this stuff, you know, Intel are the company that really made processors for computers for a long time and have made, you know, what we can do possible. But one big problem that Intel has never really got over is the ability to bring efficiency and power consumption together. You know, essentially make efficient, make the whole thing more efficient whilst equally making it you know, save on power. And that's never really happened with Intel processors. Now, Microsoft, or not Microsoft, but ARM processors promise more. If you have an iPad, for example, that's running an ARM processor. And think how quick it is to get that thing started and get into doing stuff. You don't have to wait for the loading screen and then have to, you know, wait for something to load. And once it has loaded up, you've got to wait for it to, you know, get itself sorted out. You don't get all that with ARM. It's just, it's on and you're in. And that's why a lot of people were excited about the first Surface Pro X last year. But that became a bit of a joke because it wasn't really that good at anything.
No.
And it can't run a lot of the applications we might want to use. JAWS, for example, NVDA, for example, because at the moment it can only run apps in the Windows Store. So that's precluded a lot of the apps we use. So anyway, I mean, ARM is really the big news about ARM, of course, is that Apple are going to be bringing out a MacBook potentially by the end of this year that will have an ARM processor. The belief is that they're going to have it right. But what do we think, Robin? Do you think that Microsoft have got it right with, or finally got it right with the Surface Pro X? Is that the hope?
No, still underpowered by all accounts. I think ARM, you're absolutely right. ARM is the architecture. The reduced instruction set of ARM is what Apple Silicon is based on. All of their we're onto A13, A14 probably in the announced products that are coming up, and they're screaming fast, and their chip is much smaller. It's at like 7 and 5 nanometers, where Intel is still stuck at 11, I think it is. And because of the savings that you get with the smaller architecture, you get longer battery life, you get less heat dissipation, so you don't have to have fans and things like that. And that's what that's why the iPad and iPhones, etc., are just instant on, all day battery life, that sort of thing. But Qualcomm, which is what these chips are based on, are still way behind. So yeah, there's the problem with the underpoweredness of it. And the real issue when it comes to being underpowered, as you alluded to a moment ago, is that where it doesn't have support for certain apps, they have to run in emulation, a bit like the virtual machine I was talking about before. So Windows on ARM, which is what we're talking about here, has loads of issues. A lot of assistive technologies, like you said, don't work with it. A lot of drivers for your favorite hardware devices don't work with it. developers and companies are slow to get with the program, unlike with Apple. When if Apple say, by this time next year, there will be an ARM Mac, you need to get your act together. In fact, I think they only announced it at WWDC. So well, they did. Them like
they said it would
months.
Be likely to be here before the end of the year.
Yeah. So, and everyone would jump to it. But because this is such a potentially small market, because Intel is so dominant, you know, I don't think it'll happen. So yeah, you can run 32-bit and 64-bit Intel based apps on a standard laptop, but on an ARM based chip, so far you can only run 32-bit ones, which confusingly are called x86. If you've ever seen x86 being mentioned, that's the 32-bit ones. The 64-bit ones are called x64. Don't ask.
So if you were buying a new laptop tomorrow, Tim, would this be on your shopping list?
Tomorrow? No.
Bearing in mind, the Surface Go, just to clarify, yes. The Surface Go is regular, so it's still got the Intel processor. It's the Surface Pro X range that has got this ARM processor in it.
Yeah, I think that this is a step in the right direction. Like I was going to say, I don't disagree with anything that Robin said. I think that it's interesting. It's intriguing. I like, you know, where they're going with the design and everything like that. But unfortunately, Microsoft is just behind when it comes to these Surface laptops and tablets. And if they're still around by then, if they're even a thing, I would say 2 to 4 years, 3 to 5 years. I mean, I just they're so far behind. Maybe that's too pessimistic, but I'm not, as a techie, geeky kind of person, I want to be excited about this. I really, really do. And with the advent of what ARM can provide, like everything Robin was describing, it's just not there. It really isn't. There's so many other really good laptops or hybrid type laptop tablets that I would be interested in way before I would look at any of these, which it's not that it's a bad piece of tech. It's just not there. And there's so many other options that are much better, I guess is the right way to put it.
And we should say it's £900, which does not compare favorably to an iPad, which has got almost all the same software available.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that does go in its favor that I do like, and I wish more laptops had it, kind of weird they don't, is it's got built-in 4G. Well, I say built-in 4G, you know, you can add a SIM card and you can have 4G on it. I like that feature. I think that's really good. And that's one thing that really sells it for me. And that, I was really excited about this. The first thing I thought was, wow, it's going to be faster. It's going to be more power efficient. It's going to, you know, have 4G built in. This sounds amazing. And then I hear all these rumors and stories about it being really slow, not running all the apps you want. And it makes me worried for Mac. It makes me worried to see what, because a lot of people, despite Apple's claims, a lot of the reviewers at the moment, obviously they haven't tried it yet. Maybe they've been mucking around with the developer editions. But you know, I'm not hearing, you know, people leaping up and down. Although I believe the people who are testing the developer editions are not allowed to speak publicly.
Not yet, right. No. So, and I believe the promise of that from Apple is that they have stepped away from Intel because I think of some of these issues that Robin was outlining, and they believe that they can do it better and more efficiently, do it smaller, faster. You know, with lesser heat issues, better battery, all those things that Robin outlined. So that's what we're waiting for by the end of the year, supposedly, depending on you know, how everything works with product lines and all that kind of thing, and them getting out products on time, which is obviously not happening. Apple is promising to do this better. And so that'll be the big comparison that we'll hopefully see by the end of the year.
We're going to talk about elections in a minute. The US election's coming up. How accessible is that going to be? We're going to get Tim's view on it. Before that, though, Robin, you were interviewed by Amazon, am I right in saying that? As part of World Sight Day last week.
Yes, this was on the 8th of October. I had a really good chat with them. They wrote up the interview as a blog. It's their Day One blog, O-N-E, which they put out on a regular basis. And this was for World Sight Day. If you just search for my name, Robin Christofferson, and that's like Christopher and then S-O-N on the end, World Sight Day, just search for those and you'll get the blog. And yeah, I think it's good. We had a good chat. We talked about the importance of accessibility and a bit of love for the Dot to Dot podcast. Have I mentioned the Dot to Dot podcast ever?
Any mention of this one?
Oh, no, no.
Right. Sorry. I see
but
how
it is. Amazon, you see. It's Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we don't matter. Yeah, who cares, right? We've probably sold half of Amazon's stock for them.
That's you, for us. We bought.
But, you know, don't mention us, no.
No, so sorry.
Right. Well, listen, that's good. Do check it out. Okay, so voting in the US election. So, Tim, of course, it's coming up.
Yes, it is.
So, mail-in ballots is really the way that it's all going. At least that's, I mean, if we sort of look away from Fox News and all the nonsense for a moment, you know, people are voting by mail because people don't really want to be standing in long queues. I know many places will be in that situation where there'll be, you know, people voting and waiting in long queues to do that, traveling, it seems, some distance as well from the reports. How do you do it? Do you mail in your votes anyway, or is it something you're trying for the first time?
Well, here's the thing. Usually what we will do, my wife and I, will just go to a local, what they call a precinct. So they'll have voting, you know, polling locations set up all around your state or your county, wherever you live. Typically those are in like school gymnasiums or things like that, that, you know, public schools that they're using that space for that day for voting. And we'll just show up and do what we need to do. Now, I always elect to just have my wife, Jennifer, just sit at a table with me. She pretty much knows who and what I want to vote for, but she'll confirm with me. She's always really good about that. And she'll fill in the blanks for me. Because in our state, which this is the trick here in the United States, every state can be and is in a way different from other states. So in the state that I'm in, we actually still have a paper ballot that you just fill in the little bubbles like we did in school, where you take a pencil and you know, color in the little bubble, and then you take that and feed it into a machine that counts your vote. It scans all those bubbles for what your vote was. And so we just usually default to just sitting at a table and very quietly, privately talking about it, and she fills in my ballot for me. Now, that being said, they have available, and this is the law, federal law, so even on state levels, they have to abide by this. Every polling location is required to have at least one accessible voting machine that offers large print as well as a voice feedback or screen reader option. I did try that a couple years ago at our local precinct, and I still opted to just have my wife help me because it was very antiquated, because of course the law requires that it have a large print screen as well as the screen reader feedback. But that doesn't really mean it has to be up-to-date new technology. So this was a very old, antiquated technology. There was like this spin dial that I had to like turn almost like this massive old radio dial type thing. And it would go to the next part of the ballot, whoever the next people were on, you know, on the list. And it would read it aloud, not read aloud, read it. I plugged in headphones and it would read it to me to who they were. Then I had to press some other button to navigate to pop over to who I wanted to vote for, and then hit another button and then turn the dial again to go to the next person. And I'm just like, you know what? No, thank you. I will just have my wife read this to me, and I will be fine with that. Now, I've been told and I've researched that there are other states that have much better, newer technology for this. It just depends on your state. Now, there are some states, very recently, I know the state of Maine is allowing people to go online on a secure website and fill out accessibly using your screen reader or whatever, you know, you're using, Zoom or, you know, or JAWS or whatever, and fill out the ballot, but then you still have to print it and mail it in that way. But the state of Maine is allowing you to do that. Several other states are working on that for even the general election coming up here within the month. And I don't know if it's going to be ready in time, but there are several other states working on that. Some states will let you just print a blank ballot that you still have to fill out, which obviously isn't very accessible if you don't have somebody to read it to you. But other states are working on the ability to fill that out first before printing it. There are a couple of states that I saw online that are working on letting you actually vote absentee ballot online and doing that as a secure ballot to vote online. So you could just use your screen reader or Zoom program and do it that way. A lot of the rest of it, however, the non-technical way, as you were talking about, Stephen, is absentee balloting. So basically contacting your local election board, saying that, you know, because of your disability or whatever the reason, you want to vote absentee, which basically just means you're not showing up at a polling place and you want a ballot to mail in. And they will mail you one. You fill it out in any way that you're able to do, no matter how you do that, and then just mail it back. Or you could even drop it off. They have Dropbox locations. And as you indicated, sometimes that's real close to your home, sometimes not so much. And you may have to go far to get there or just mail it back. And that is happening in record numbers this year, of course, in the 2020 presidential election and other elections. The amount of mail-in ballots has gone up exponentially, and will continue to, so much so that they're saying that, you know, we may not know the results of some elections for days, if not weeks, potentially. But yes, I mean, there are different options. Thankfully, we are, you know, we have the federal laws dating back to 1965 that for the first time, believe it or not, in 65, with part of the Civil Rights Act, there was a Voter Rights Act as part of that that said, oh yeah, if you're blind or disabled, you can have somebody with you that can read to you your ballot and help you with it. It took us till 65 to get that to be legal. And then they revised that in 91, again in 2002. And so they do tweak it over time as technology comes along. But it is tricky though. If you are in the United States and you want to vote accessibly, it is the law. It has to be available to you. If it's not available to you, it is a legal violation of Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act. So, you know, if anybody does have a problem, if you're hearing this in the United States, definitely let somebody know if it's not accessible, because it should be, and they should allow you to have somebody to help you if you don't want to do it or can't do it any other way. But that's the trick, is that federally there's some laws, statewide there's some laws, and you just have to know what those are and what it's going to be, what will be available in your particular state, because it absolutely could be a different experience depending on where you live.
Well, speaking of that, let's hear from Chris Danielson. He is from the National Federation of the Blind in the States, and he, of course, along with his organization and members all across America, work to make you know, life better for blind and partially sighted people through a huge amount of advocacy work that they do. Let's hear how they're combating the issue of inaccessible voting and the challenges that they're facing.
A lot of states are going primarily to voting by mail, or what's called absentee voting. And that is a problem, because in most states, there is not a system that allows blind people to vote privately and independently from home. So you get a paper ballot in the mail. It's a printed ballot. You have to get somebody to help you mark it, which, of course, compromises the secrecy of your ballot. And so what we've been fighting for in the last several months here is to make sure that as many states as possible get systems in place that allow blind people to vote from home. And these would be either a file that's emailed to the voter, an HTML file, or a ballot that the person can mark online, and then it can be printed either at your house or at the election office and then scanned like a regular ballot. There are some systems where you can return the ballot by email and the election office prints it out, but obviously for security reasons, at this time, you don't have a straight internet voting system where you mark your ballot online and submit it online. That's not considered to be secure.
Chris Danielson there from the National Federation of the Blind. Share your thoughts. You can email us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, and we will, of course, read your emails out in a future program. Speaking of emails, we'll get to those in a few moments, but first I want to bring in Mohammed Atif. He is part of RNIB's Technology for Life team. He's joining us this week to tell us how to use your Fire tablet from Amazon using VoiceView.
Hello, I'm here today to talk to you about Amazon Fire tablet, and in particular the accessibility tools and features built into this device. I specifically want to concentrate today on the VoiceView screen reader. You may have heard of VoiceOver on Apple, you may have heard of TalkBack on Android, and you may have heard of Voice Assist on the Samsung offering. But now Amazon are here with VoiceView, and it's here to stay. This means that the Amazon Fire Tablet can be used by people that have low or no vision at all, which means that the Amazon Fire Tablet is now a viable, suitable, and excellent choice for people who want to buy their first tablet or are looking for an additional tablet. The VoiceView screen reader is already built into the Amazon Fire Tablet, just like it is on Apple and Android. This means that you don't need to purchase anything in addition to the tablet because it's already here, ready to use. VoiceView can be activated by using the lock switch. This means you click the lock switch 3 times quickly and VoiceView will turn on. I have a tablet in front of me. I'm just going to unlock the screen. You won't hear anything when I do that because VoiceView at the moment isn't running. So I'm just going to press the power button once and now press the power button 3 times to activate VoiceView.
VoiceView ready. Technology for life, team. Double tap to switch profile.
If you're familiar with various gestures that are used in Android and iOS through their talkback and voiceover features, you shouldn't have any issues using the VoiceView feature on Amazon Fire. This is because it uses most of the gestures used in those devices. So for example, the Explore by Touch feature where you move your finger around the screen and each item under your finger will be announced to you. You can then double tap on the item that you want to activate. You can use gestures like the flick right and flick left gesture. Just like on iOS and on Android, the flick right gesture will move you forward in a list of items or a grid of icons, and the flick left gesture will move you back. I'm going to unlock my device now and give you a demonstration of how this works. To unlock an Amazon Fire device, you swipe up from the bottom of the screen with 3 fingers slightly apart, and it will unlock your device.
Device unlocked. Home. Amazon Insider. New items. Item 1 of 1.
I am now on the home screen. At the moment, I have a grid of icons in front of me. I'm going to move my finger around the screen. This is called Explore by Touch.
Silk Browser. App Store. Row. Amazon Photos. Row. Camera. Row. Email. Goodreads. Row. Books. Row 2. Column 1.
So VoiceView is reading everything that was under my finger, and then it told me that I could double tap to activate that item. The gesture that I'm going to use now is the flick left and flick right gesture to move between the items on the screen at this time.
Music. App Store. Prime Video. Fire for Kids. Books. Music. Row 2. Column 2. Audible. Amazon Photo. Games. Amazon Alexa. Row 3. Column 1.
I'm now going to double tap on Amazon Alexa to activate that item. Like with iOS and Android, again, I can double tap anywhere on the screen. I don't need to know where the icon is. I can double tap anywhere on the screen to activate that item.
Home. Communicate. Play.
Now I'm in the Amazon Alexa app. If I wanted to go home now, there are 2 ways you can do this. For example, I can use a gesture to go home, which means I can swipe up and left, or I can use the virtual buttons on the screen. One thing you have to remember with Amazon Fire tablets is that they have no buttons whatsoever on the face of the device. It's completely screen. But they have 3 virtual buttons. The back button, which is on the left, the home button, which is in the middle, and the recently opened apps or the app switcher on the right. So I'm going to unlock my device again with 3 fingers, and I'm going to find the home button, which
device
is on the
unlocked.
Button.
App. Home button.
Double tap.
Amazon Alexa, row 3, column 1.
For anything covered here, please give us a call. The Technology for Life team can be reached on 0303 123 9999 or by emailing if you have access to email TFL, that stands for Technology for Life, TFL@rnib.org.uk. Thank you.
Thank you, Mohammed, and lots more to come from the Technology for Life team in the next few weeks. Another member of the team back with us next week, and like Mohammed says, get in touch with the team if you want any advice or support. Right, let's get into these then.
Email, we get email, we get your email every day.
Every day?
Here's your mail today.
Emails, Andy's here. He's got the inbox. How many pages is it worth to you today, Andy?
15.
Mm.
My goodness.
Get your questions in now for summer 2021.
Maybe 22.
Yeah. See how we go.
Right, let's start off. What have you got?
Right, we're going to start off with one from Alan. Hi, says Alan. I was wondering if you could help me. We're developing a Win32 application that will be in operation for another 1 or 2 years. The application has been around since 2012 and hasn't had a spell checker, but now it needs one. It must also have the ability to add to the English default language, as the vocabulary is technical English, effectively a different language. The spell checker must also have the facility for the custom language to reside on our core application so it can learn new vocabulary from the users. Is there an open source or relatively inexpensive option that you can recommend for a spell checker that can be programmatically added to our app? Kind regards, that's from Alan.
Oh, no.
That's a very technical question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the guy that came up with Columbus Nation earlier as some kind of, you know, word collab. So I'm not the one to answer this question. I think Robin might know an answer, though.
Well, I've done a little bit of homework. And
homework?
This may or may not fit the bill for him. I'm hoping it does. So Windows has its own native spell checking API. And an API means exactly what Alan needs, which is that it's an application programming interface. So it's for developers to take advantage of. And it's for Windows 8.1 onwards. So there's an issue there with people running his app on Windows 7. But now that that's out of service, you know, and it doesn't have patches for it anymore, one would hope that everyone will be on at least 8.1 onwards. So, yeah, it's a spell checking API. If you go to appdata.\Microsoft\spelling, that's the folder. Now, the appdata folder is hidden. So if you pull up the run dialog, you know, with Windows R, and you type %appdata, all one word, %, that's how you can get to a hidden folder. So if you do %appdata%\Microsoft\spelling, then it will take you straight to that folder. You will see a file in there which has all of the additions, exceptions, autocorrect entries that the dictionary has. And because it's an API, you can call to it. Hopefully you can pull the whole dictionary if you want to have it, you know, literally local within your application. But certainly, you know, keep a note of the additions and exceptions, etc., that the user of the application has made. Store those locally in the application, which is what he said he wants to do. So that if people then take that elsewhere, they can have a copy of it. You know, you can have an export function or whatever it might be. But yeah, so Windows already do it. It can learn from, you know, you can make exceptions, you can make additions, etc., via the UI in your application, and it just writes it to those, and it's free.
I have no idea what you just said, but whatever that meant, great. I'm really chuffed. I'm sorry, has something happened in this program that's meant that you need a degree to listen to it now?
I don't know whether it did make sense, but hopefully it does.
Well, I hope it does.
It made some sense, yes. It did make some sense to me, so I will second everything that you said. Well done, Stephen. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Well, remember the questions we used to get where they'd say, which is better, an iPhone or an Android? And I'd say iPhone, and we'd all laugh. Remember those days?
I remember those APIs.
And whatever it was.
Who do they think we are?
Yeah, exactly. People with brains. Right, okay. What else have we got? Because we need to move on from that one quickly.
Well, we're going to continue with the theme of asking Robin questions here. This is Shajat, who's emails in with a question for Robin regarding talking cash machines. Mm. Hi, Steve, Robin, and Andy.
Hello.
And Tim. Could you ask Robin if there is any way of making all banks and building societies in ensuring that there is a lot of talking cash machines, as I feel that this is a bit of a postcode lottery for blind people to do this independently, as I feel that if Barclays can do it, then why can't other banks follow suit? Banks like Halifax and other well-known banks, as I feel that many banks and building societies need to be accountable for their actions, and whether you could tell me whether you can lodge a complaint or feedback to these banks and building societies, because blind people are being left behind. And in regards to the email jingle, he says in other news, I love it, but it needs to be updated now as I can feel it age. And I feel that Andy's voice is very soothing. Oh, thank you very much, Zed. And he should utilise his voice in a satellite navigation system, as I feel his voice will soothe any irate drivers who are travelling long journeys. Sure, if anybody wants to set me up with that, feel free, drop me an email.
Yeah, drop me an email. My fees will be in the reply.
Yes.
Keep up the excellent work that Tech Talk does. But can you ask Robin to do a tutorial on how to join Twitter using Windows 10 computers? Yeah, that is from Shazat.
Do you know what I love about this? Shazat has figured this out. There's no point asking me because it's a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
So he'll go straight to Robin and he'll hopefully get a response. Yeah, Robin, come on, fix it. Why aren't all the banks giving us accessible cash machines? Get on with it, will you? Get it fixed.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if you could lean on them somehow? But I think it's going to be an unrealistic expectation. Barclays have really gone that extra mile, and yet they've only managed to get, I think it's about 50-odd% of their ATMs with that little audio jack. If you feel that, then you can plug your earphones in and it'll have speaking capabilities. There's just not the stomach for it. You know, the legal requirement is to make reasonable adjustments. And for many people, you know, if you've got an accessible app or an accessible website, or you can call for phone banking, which, by the way, shot up, you know, post lockdown. I was interviewing Paul from Barclays the other day, and yeah, it just went up massively. Interestingly as well, the use of the larger text size option in iOS can be detected by apps, and pre-lockdown it was a relatively low percentage, and after lockdown it went up to 30%. 30% of users in iOS had upped their font size, and the Barclays Bank app could tell that it had been upped. So they had that data, which I thought was really interesting.
I think it's interesting because, you know, I've said this a lot about a lot of different things, but it is often down to us as individuals to, and I know it sounds trite to say, because you say, well, you know, what difference can my voice make if I just call up my bank and complain?
A lot.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's this maybe suggestion that, well, if I do that, nothing's going to come of it. Nothing else will come of that. The truth is that we do have to get together on this. RNIB have been big on this. I know AbilityNet have as well. But, you know, RNIB have done a lot on this over the years, working with the banks to get accessible cash machines, talking about them when no one else was, and really pushing that. And I'm seeing, I mean, maybe I'm one of the lucky ones in the postcode areas, but as Shazat says, but, you know, very few I go to, and I don't go to many, obviously. I go to the local area, or, you know, when I was going into the city centre in those days, you know, a lot of the cash machines were talking cash machines. The most irritating part was where they had the talking cash machine. You would plug in your headphones, but the talking software wasn't activated. Now, that's ridiculous. I mean, it's one thing, they've spent the money on it, and they haven't even turned it on. And trying to explain that sometimes to a bank teller, you know, as I go in there wagging my finger and saying, this is not good enough, and can I speak to the manager, please? And all that nonsense. And, of course, it doesn't really get you anywhere because no one knows what you're talking about. But at the same token, they've put the money in, they've put the effort in to do it. The big, you know, heads of the banks have put the money into it, and they haven't even turned the thing on. So that's another problem that goes with this.
Mm-hmm. What's the audio description conversation all over again? We've talked about that on this show and in other places before, where an audio description track might be available for a particular show on network or cable television, and it's there, it's playing, but somebody at the network just didn't hit the button to turn it on because they weren't aware that it was there. And it's a very similar thing with the banks. Now, thankfully, here in the States, I haven't looked into this, but I'm pretty sure there is a legal kind of a mandate for either a certain percentage, if not all, cash machines to have accessibility. But similar to you, Stephen, pretty much anywhere I go, there is a headphone jack, and it has almost always been turned on as far as I remember. I don't think I've actually ever had it not on. So I've been very lucky in that, but that's not always been the case. That's been a very recent thing that's happened. So yeah, it is a big deal. But like you said, as long as we do notify them, and the more of us that do speak up, the more feedback they get, the more they'll realize, okay, this is an actual thing. There are a big segment of our population using our services, using our bank, that need this, that want this. So it is important to get in contact.
I also wonder as well, it's a good time again to go back to that point about accessible technology, things like Apple Pay, using contactless cards. You know, there's other ways to use payment or make payments. I know it doesn't help buying your paper in the mall. Well, I guess many blind people are going to buy the paper, I guess. But, you know, when was the last time I bought a newspaper? Never. But, okay, you know, I'm going out to buy my, you know, chocolate bar of the morning, as I might. Actually, that's quite a nice idea.
As you do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I could do that. And I could, go to the local shop, and they may not have the ability to take payments that way, so you need to have cash. So that's one challenge, hence why you need the cash machines. But I think that the reliance on cash is going away, and I'm not worried about that. I'm quite happy about that. What I'm annoyed at are the shops that don't have the card machines. You know, you go to a store, you go to a cafe. Let me rephrase that. When I used to do all those things, then you would go in.
You can
in
still, you know.
Well, you can, but it's...
Until they lock it down again.
Exactly, until next week. So, you know, it's one of those, you go in and they say, oh, and I always say first, do you take cards? And if they say no, I'm off. I'm not interested. Because I think, I can't be bothered with this. You know, this is just nonsense. It's 2020, for goodness sake. I know it's a pretty rubbish year, but, you know, you could at least have a card machine. Anyway, that's my rant over. Right, what else have we got, Andy?
Well, just on Shahzad's last point there.
Oh, right, okay.
Twitter,
yeah, come on.
Is 10TW Blue. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, get it downloaded, Shahzad. It's the best piece of software in the world.
Yeah, you guys have been convincing me on this one. I haven't downloaded it yet, but TW Blue sounds really, really nice, very accessible. So yeah, I'm actually going to give that a try here soon myself.
It is extremely noisy. But I kind of like it. I
set turn those off.
You can turn the sounds off, but I quite like them. I like it. There's a little bird twittery one that
I've
set up.
It's like an aviary on your computer.
Exactly. It sounds like I live inside a pet shop. But it's brilliant. I love it. Right, Andy, what else have we got?
Richard Foster has emailed in, otherwise known as Richard the First. Uh-huh. Hello, Andy, Robin, and Stephen. And Tim. An unexpected problem happened with my emails.
We'll get there.
I went, eventually. Yes. He says, an unexpected problem happened with my emails. I went down to Sussex to do a few days' work, and on arrival, my phone was unable to log into my email server. Rather a nuisance. It turned out to be a Google security thing. They noticed that my phone was not in its usual geographic location, so it blocked emails, thinking the phone might have fallen into somebody else's hands. Synaptic was able to get the problem sorted out by assuring them that I did indeed still have the phone on me, albeit in a different location. They said it should be fine on my return back up to Aberdeen, which it was. Do you know, or do you happen to know, if there is an email address that I can contact Google in advance of my next trip, which is probably in October, so hopefully, Richard, you've not made it already, to avoid the same thing happening again. Thanks, as ever, for your show. Kind regards, Richard the First.
Well, I mean, I know you would call your bank and tell them if you were going abroad to say, you know, look, in case you find my bank card being used in Dubai, it's okay, it's me. But I've not heard of this. That's a new one.
Well, yeah, for that's Google, just not going to happen. You're not going to get a human flipping a switch for you proactively. No. They're going to wait till the algorithms have done a boo-boo, and you know, you'll have to do the same thing again, unfortunately.
The algorithms have done a boo-boo.
That's right.
Is that a technical term?
Very, very technical term there,
yeah,
Robin. Yes.
I tell you, well, we've set a precedent here. We've got to keep up the
technical. Oh, you're not kidding.
From so taking so forward to this now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, well, it's not going to happen. Hopefully, because I'm only guessing that he's never travelled that far before, but maybe the algorithms now know that he's a little bit more of a jet setter. No, I don't know how he got down to wherever he got down to. Somerset, was it? But yeah, so
Sussex.
Maybe it'll be a little bit more forgiving next time he goes somewhere out of his neighbourhood.
Well, this is something you can actually go in and set. I mean, I don't remember if it's under the two-factor authentication or if it's somewhere else under privacy or security, but I've had this happen to me even recently with my Google account, where I log into it maybe on a different device, or I log into it while I'm in a different location or something, especially if I'm on a different device. And what I have mine set up to do is to actually email me to at a backup email to say, you know, this is your backup, you know, security email for your Gmail account. We have noticed a login to your Gmail account on another device or in a different location than usual. Is this really you? And you can choose to have that on, but you should be able to turn that off. And it might be on by default. Unfortunately, I don't know where in the settings in Google that would be, but you should be able to go into either possibly two-factor authentication or, like I said, privacy, security, somewhere in there. There should be an option to either just turn that off or to select whether you want to be texted maybe or emailed or not when they do notice that you're somewhere else or you know, some other way, or like I said, just turn it off. But that's what's happening. And if you get that email and you just didn't notice the email come through and didn't respond to it to say, yep, this is really me, I'm okay, then yeah, they very possibly might try to start locking you down. But that's just a security feature. So nobody to call like you would your bank, like you said, Stephen, but definitely check out the Google settings. There should be something in there.
It's kind of creepy though, is it not? I mean, I know it's an algorithm that's doing it itself, but it's a bit creepy that it's obviously aware of your movements. And I mean, we know this stuff. This is not news. I mean, of course it watches everywhere you go, right? I mean, someone said to me the other week about getting a device. I can't remember what it was. Oh yeah, it was the app, the coronavirus test and trace app, whatever it's called.
Tracing, yep.
And someone said, oh, I don't want that because, you know, it's going to watch where I'm going and it knows where I am. Well, the phone knows anyway. It's got, exactly. She's got an Amazon Echo. She's got a TV with voice control. You know, everything's watching what she's doing, you know, keeping an eye on where she is. Or, like, do you have a webcam on your computer? It's watching you as well. Everything's got you.
We've really worried people now. Yeah. The irony is that that's probably the only app that I'm confident isn't.
Yeah, it's probably the only one that isn't watching it because the government made it. Exactly. The government did it. And
so if you have Wi-Fi, cellular, and GPS all turned on, one or all the above, you're being watched. I mean, that's just the way it is.
And it's not necessarily nefarious. It's just that you're being tracked because that's what the devices are built to do. And if anybody actually read the terms and conditions, they'd know that. But they don't. That includes me. right, look, we get time for just one more brief email.
Here's an email from Peter. Hello, everyone. Hope you're all well and keeping safe. I have completed the survey. He's talking about the Tech Talk survey we had a couple of weeks ago, which I accessed through the show notes on the podcast. I suggested that Tech Talk is too short. We need at least 2 hours.
I agree.
There are several podcasts that are all that length, and you have a lot of emails. Yes, we do. And a lot of news to impart. Yes, we do. So I say make another show on the subject. And on another subject, the government is on about digital ID. Let's hope it's better than a test and trace. They couldn't trace my backyard. I don't think that's from Peter in Nottingham. And he goes on, well, if no Peters have been taken, he wants to be Peter the Great.
He can be Peter the Great. I second it.
You dub thee? Yes.
Exactly. I dub thee, yeah. You've been watching The Crown again, haven't you? Look, that's it. We're out of time again, aren't we always? But we will be back next week. Lots more to come. Of course, we'll be catching up on the Big Apple event and giving our thoughts on that. Robin, as always, Tim, and emails Andy. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.